This episode of Country Squire Radio is brought to you by Missouri Meerschaum. We thank them for supporting this show, and we thank you for supporting them.
You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
JD!
Hey, Bo. Good afternoon, man.
Man, good afternoon to you too, sir. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. You know, I've been looking forward to this all day long. We're, June 17th as we are recording this. This will go out later this week as a podcast. But, you know, it's just so cool, man. As you have traveled off to Texas and, you know, we used to bump into each other a little more often here in central Mississippi. But, man, it's just my time to check in with you, dude. And I'm excited to chat with you every Monday. It's just good. We check in with our Squire community, our Squire listeners, and I get to hear your glowing voice. So yeah, I'm doing great.
I'm glad to hear it, man. No, likewise. It's always good to check in with you, man. I feel remiss for not saying doing this last week, but I definitely want to do it now. Happy last not Father's Day.
Oh yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, actually, happy. I've kind of considered it a Father's Day. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, but it's different from when the kids can actually start bringing you stuff.
That's right.
You know, granted, next year for you it'll be like, here's a dirty diaper, Dad. Like it'll be, you know, it grows and goes. But I got to tell you, man, I had a brilliant Father's Day this last past
weekend. Oh, that's good, man. That's great.
Yeah. The kiddos, they surprised me with breakfast in bed. They had waffles and all great stuff. I went to the store and got myself a very nice steak and enjoyed consuming that. And had a good day at the pool, and it was fun, man.
That's
good,
wonderful,
good Father's
dude.
Day over here. How is things at the pipe shop? Because I feel like there's two businesses in particular that really like capitalize on Father's Day. And that's, you know, the hardware store and the pipe shop. So hopefully this was like a really good day for you.
Dude, yeah, things around the pipe shop were hopping, man. It was amazing. We, you know, I always forget kind of how intense the rush is for Father's Day. You know, you obviously you think about holidays, you know, in the world, Christmas time, and you know, you think about International Pipe Smoking Day in February, and that's always a rush. But Father's Day, yeah, it's incredible. People come out of the woodworks, and you know, it's funny. We always have these guys. We've talked about this multiple times, but it's like, I love my dad. He smokes a pipe sometime. I might buy him a little something, but I'm really here for me.
Right.
And it just happens all the time. So it's always kind of funny. It's a wink and a nod between me and the customer, and then they wind up buying something stupid for themselves, you know?
That's what you got to do, man.
But it's great. It's great. It's it was, you know, a lot of these guys, too. One thing, you know, the fathers are like, well, I'm the father. I'm going to treat myself, right? And one thing I've seen more and more over the past couple of years, it's kind of neat, really, new dads, and I'm going to do this as well, which, I mean, obviously, not going to do this? But new dads occasionally are buying pipes in honor of their newborn children.
And,
yeah, I just think it's kind of a neat idea. You know, I have several customers that have come in and done that over the past couple of years. And, you know, I have a child, and for every child, I get a new pipe, you know, and then when I smoke that pipe, I think of that child, or maybe I use that as a time to pray for that child, or, you know, think about my hopes and dreams for that child or something. And yeah, I just think that's kind of cool, right? You know, it's like something you can go to when you're kind of thinking fondly about a certain special person in your life. So, yeah, I don't know. Let's keep having kids and keep buying pipes, baby.
It's great, great world advice right there, man. Well, you know, you'd mentioned to me before the show that we had a pilgrim come by, huh?
Dude, it was awesome. Yeah, today was so amazing. I'm sitting there at the shop. It was a crazy day, to be honest with you. Like we had a pipe event today with Arcadia Pipes, which Arcadia is a distributorship which is out of Italy, and it represents several pipes that you've heard of: Ser Jacopo, Luigi Vuprati, La Natra. Just so many pipe brands that are fantastic. You know, Master of Geppetto. So anyway, we were having this awesome event today. Our friend Maurizio was there and brought just a whole smorgasbord of pipes, and they were, you know, gorgeous and took up the whole shop. This is a little stressful, got a lot going on, a lot of moving parts, people perusing the pipe trunk show, and me sending photos to some of our customers abroad, making sure they got awareness of what we had and saw if, you know, we have some customers every time we have a trunk show, they want to know kind of what's going on. So trying to keep them apprised, all that to say, it was crazy. And then all of a sudden this soft spoken man comes in today, about our age, Bo, I think, and he said his name is Steven, and he's a fan of the show, and he had this very curious accent. And Steven is a Frenchman that lives in Scotland. And he, yeah, and he came to the Country Squire today, and it was so cool, man. It was really, really wow. great. His wife, who he met in Canada, actually, but is from the South. She grew up in Texas, and her family, a lot of them now live in New Orleans, and so they come back pretty regularly to visit their family. And while they were here, you know, in the U.S., they made a point to, you know, spend an entire day and a night here in Jackson and came hang out with us, man. So it was so cool,
dude,
Steven.
Just
really, really precious couple, man. It was so great, him and his wife. But they got to come up. Steven actually works for, how Scottish is this, right? Steven actually works for a Scotch whiskey distillery, right? And so he's actually like one of the marketing directors for them. It's
really?
It's, Ben Romick in Elgin, Scotland, Ben Romick. And it's actually, the way Steven described it, it's a very small distillery. They used to do mostly scotch for blends that they would sell, and it would be put into blended whiskey. But now, for the past several years, they've been doing their own single malt, very small batch stuff. It's, you know, gaining popularity, but still has a small footprint. But it was cool, Bo. He actually brought me and you some of this scotch. He brought us a bottle and also brought us, are you familiar with these little scotch glasses, the Glencairn glasses?
Yeah. It kind of have a little bit of a curvature to them.
Or yeah, they almost look like a little flute or a little bud vase kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, I got a couple of those actually. Yeah.
Well, you have another one now. Because all the way from Scotland, man, Steven brought us one. So that was cool. Got to break that bottle open with him. And so hopefully by the time you come to Jackson, there will be some of that scotch left.
You bet, dude. You better. Come on, man. No, that needs to be part of our next Squire Select.
I don't know. Maybe I can ship you a little dram of it, but I don't know.
A little flask. Yeah. Get a flask in the mail. That's awesome.
You'll have to be a good boy, but we'll see. Yeah. No, it was really cool, man.
You mentioned they do have kind of a smaller footprint. Can you get this stuff in the States right
now? Yeah. Well, currently they are changing distributors in America. So, but he said to stay tuned on that it'll be within the coming months more readily available. But it's Ben Romick, Benromach, if I wrote that down correctly. Really, really beautiful scotch. It's a peated Speyside whiskey. You know, we talk about on our Squire Select episodes, you know, scotches occasionally. And this particular whiskey, you know, Speysides tend to not have any of the smoke element there. But this is a peated whiskey, so it does have a hint of smoke kind of in the background. I've already have some tobacco pairings that I'm interested in testing with this particular scotch. So yeah. Pretty cool.
Dude,
pretty
seriously, cool. You better not drink my whiskey.
Yeah, we'll see how good you are. Yeah.
Oh man, I need to call somebody up there and have them sneak it behind your back.
Right, I know, right? Yeah. Well, I would like to say I'm actually at home right now while we're recording, and I wanted to make sure I had the name of this scotch right. And so I texted up to the shop. I texted our friend Steven, who works for us at the shop. Of course, we all know Steven
is... Steven from Scotland, from
no,
France,
that's
from...
Yeah, Steven...
to a Canadian.
Yeah, Steven, who is the anti-hurricane, right?
Right.
And he said, actually, that he had to go find, in order to get the answer for me off this bottle of whiskey, he had to go find it because the hurricane actually showed up this afternoon, apparently,
while
I had left.
You keep that whiskey away from the hurricane.
Exactly. And so Steven actually, he had hidden the scotch. And so he had to go back in the office and you know, pull it out from the cabinet that he had tucked it away in to protect it from the, you know, from the thirsty monster. So,
man, oh, I'm stressed out right now.
I know, man. Breathe easy. Our boy, the anti-hurricane is looking out for us. So.
He's on it. Yeah. Yeah. Steven's looking out for Steven. That's great.
You know, we have had a bunch of pilgrims recently, and it's so funny because a few of them have actually gotten to meet the hurricane, like while they're in Jackson. Like a lot of them in the
Is
past
it because
have
I'm
not.
Gone. Like, does the hurricane show up more now that I left town?
No, I don't think so. I think maybe he's, you know, just for whatever reason, he's just been able to spend more time at the shop. And, you know, and having said that, when pilgrims are coming by the shop. And so, you know, it's like, okay, you never know what pilgrims are thinking when they come in the shop. Again, because we're just a small little pipe shop. I pull out as much of the red carpet as I can find. We want them to, you know, feel like they're well taken care of and at home. But then the hurricane shows up and you're just like, right. All right, here we go. Like that, you know, it's like, you know, in the South, what is that? What do they say in Steel Magnolias? You know, that the difference with people in the South is we bring our crazy like out into the living room where you can see it, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, when the hurricane shows up, it's just, we just kind of bring our crazy out there, you know? So
it's just there.
Yeah. It's just, you can't hide that. So anyway, we've had a lot of friends stop by and they've had a lot of fun with that. So, but yeah, man, good stuff. It was great to meet Steven today and, try that whiskey and, great listener and friend all the way from, Elgin, Scotland.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be watching the increase of the distribution of that beverage, with great interest.
I know.
Man, well, you know, so, you know, you mentioned, of course, the crazy comes out and everything. Well, you know, as old age hits us, the crazy just increases and the Squire, man, she ain't as young as she used to be. Coming up here on the 49-year anniversary. Tell me about what's going on, man.
Yeah, 49 years. It's incredible. And we kind of teased this out last week. We're finally starting to nail down some of the details for our 49th anniversary as a shop. It's funny, every time I mention it, you know, folks look at me and they're like, well, you're not 49. And I'm like, nah, I guess I'm not. Yeah. But yeah, 49 years this August, and we're thrilled. We are actually announcing now that we are having an event featuring Max Stokeby and STG Lane, and they are going to have a spread. Yeah. At the Country Squire on August 15th, which is a Thursday night. It's from 6 to 9 p.m. And man, everybody listening and everybody everywhere is welcome. And we're really, really fired up about that. So August 15th from 6 to 9 p.m. Max Stokeby will be there along with General Cigar featuring a whole bunch of great brands.
Max isn't going to be there. Max isn't going to be there.
He's going to be the event. Yeah.
Max is going to be there?
Max is going to be there, man.
I thought you were going to have a cardboard cutout of Max. You're going to actually have Max there.
No, like I'm telling you, I had to call in a lot of favors. And like, you know, Max is actually, he's risking the quality of his reputation by coming down and hanging out with me on our 49th birthday.
Generations of the Stokeby name tossed to the wind.
I know, right? Down the Country Squire. It's so careless, just so careless. But man, yeah, our buddy Max is going to be there in town, you know, talking, man, great pipe tobaccos. We'll have a whole slew of you know, Stokeby and Lane tobaccos there, things like Orlick and Escudo, and it'll be great. Also, General Cigar, they are going to be gracious enough to bring in some of their most esteemed brands, brands like CAO and Cohiba and Partagas. We're just really, really fired up about that. So again, August 15th from 6 to 9 p.m. If you are in our area, or if you're not, this will give you a reason to come and be really excited to see. We're going to have live music and food and just a whole night of it. So anyway, if you're around, come on down.
Man, that's awesome, man. We got to give a major shout out to, you know, it's awesome whenever the pilgrims are coming in, anybody traveling to the shop. But you know, the great thing is that this show is made possible by the listeners and those who have supported us, who become members at patreon.com/countrysquireradio. I want to give a major shout out, though, to back in the day when we first launched it, our 12th actual member that signed up back then, Jonathan Daly, just recently bumped up his membership from Pilgrim to Squire. And I was just, you know, when we see the bump ups happen from time to time. But Jonathan in particular, like when I see a number that is that's in those like, you know, early teens, like preteens, really, because this is the 12th member of the club. And so, you know, really want to just give a major shout out there. Thank you so much for supporting us, for increasing your support, Jonathan. We see that and we just want to let you know. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we've had a lot of those too recently, man. We are so honored. People that over time have, you know, been with us from the very beginning of the Pipe Club on Patreon. And man, you know, are gracious enough, have, you know, experienced some value in what we're doing, and you know, have upped their ante as they've been able to. And man, it's been great. It's just such an honor to be with you every week and to have your support.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we jump into tonight's topic, I want to let everybody know that we've got an episode coming up soon, a pipe culture episode. Now, for those that are unaware, we do a series called Pipe Culture, where we take a look at the culture that surrounds the pipe smokers, and then also just the something of like the mythology around it. I mean, that might be a little bit too grandiose a word, but I'm throwing it in given the nature of this particular episode.
I think that's fair. Yeah.
Right. I mean, like the lore of the pipe, the community that surrounds it, the story that binds us, the things that connect us, the thing that separate us. Regardless, it is kind of a study, a non-scientific study of pipe culture. And we've been doing within that series kind of a mini series of its own, which is places, talking about various places in which we enjoy our pipe. And so we have got one coming up soon, which is the porch. So
the porch.
What that means is we're asking you, the listener, you know, when you think of like pipe smoking on the porch, what does that mean to you? What kind of imagery comes to mind? What kind of stories might you have? Write those into us and share those, because we love reading off those stories as part of our pipe culture series and really turning the mics over to you and sharing kind of what your thoughts are. This is, like I said, a non-scientific study, but one that we're all kind of doing together by sharing our own experiences, our own visions of kind of what this might be. So
yeah.
Pipe culture places. The next one is the porch. If you got thoughts, if you got theories, if you got feelings, send those in. show@countrysquireradio.com is the place to do it. All right, John David, this episode is a long time coming.
Yeah, I'd say.
In many respects, this is like we've tiptoed around this particular episode. Now, you know, for those who've never listened before, we've got a series called Heroes of the Bowl. You may have noticed that directly in the title of this episode. And this is where we kind of take a look at pipe smokers from both a history and fiction. And we kind of take a look at their life and kind of what they represent and you know, some notable aspects of their life, their personality, but then also, you know, the fact that they were pipe smokers and perhaps what they smoked, or, you know, the imagery that they kind of contributed to also that kind of grand pipe culture as well. And I think it is safe to say in the world of nonfiction, as in a real person, obviously in the world of fiction, this person's a titan as well. But in the world of like actual people, actual pipe smokers, few hold a candle to being more iconic than today's focus of the Heroes of the Bowl, J.R.R. Tolkien.
Yeah.
John, before we even jump into the man himself, I mean, like, if you had to give kind of an overview or kind of some general thoughts about the impact that Tolkien has had on just kind of the pipe smoking community. I mean, put the world aside for a minute. Like, just specifically the pipe smoking community. Like how would you describe that?
Yeah, it's incredibly hard to put to words, because it spans, you know, over 100 years. I mean, we're talking about someone that has had an impact, like you said. If we're just cluing in on the pipe community and you know, pipe smoking in general itself, I mean, we're talking about someone that has had an incredible influence during his lifetime and posthumously. I mean, it's incredible, man. Just right. Think about all the richness that that Tolkien brought from the pipe, how it ministered to him both in life and in war. He inserted that into you know, the fantastical worlds that he created, and then it is brought back out, you know, decades after he's been no longer with us, right? And you know, created this whole new generation of pipe smokers. It's really really remarkable. Yeah, it would be hard to find someone outside of the tobacco or pipe industry, perhaps that has affected pipe smoking more than J.R.R. Tolkien. Yeah.
You know, when kind of sitting down and kind of preparing for this episode, you know, there's so much about Tolkien that, you know, we as pipe smokers, we probably already come knowing, of course, you know, the creator of Lord of the Rings, the creator of The Hobbit, you know, his literary best buds with C.S. Lewis, their friendship is kind of become the stuff of legends.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot that we kind of bring into our common understanding of Tolkien, but. Let me ask you something, John David. When you think of Tolkien, does this word come to mind? Prankster?
You know, not off the top of my head. I guess it doesn't. Yeah. But maybe maybe that's true.
What about this one? Partier?
No, not at all.
How about terrible driver? And I'm not talking about in his elder years.
No. That too, huh?
Yeah, no. So J.R.R. Tolkien, man, he was a funny guy. He was a prankster. He would often use props to throw people off. He was a fan of beer. He was very, very fond of it. And it's funny because we have so many different kind of recordings of Tolkien talking about his love of beer in particular. But that time he's kind of an older statesman who's enjoying a beverage and a pipe. But you got to remember, the reason why we associate certain things with older statesmen is because that's what they were doing back during their frat days. You know what I mean? Like, this was a dude that would like show up to parties dressed up as polar bears. Like he was kind of a wild and fun guy. Now, not to say, of course, that he wasn't also intellectual. He was a man of much character. But yeah, I was kind of shocked to learn that he was kind of something of a funnier guy. In
that's so interesting,
days.
Bo. I guess I'd never I never really knew that aspect about Tolkien. You know, he does come across, of course, we Professor Tolkien, right? This super intellectual, incredibly thoughtful and tender-hearted, you know, very focused on his faith and literature and writing and all this stuff. But I never knew he was a freaking animal.
Well, you know, it's interesting because you have to think about, you know, his history. And so not just, you know, the man that we know him as today, kind of at the end, you know, at the conclusion of his life, with his life's works on full display and having such far-reaching influence. But yeah, before he was, you know, the, you know, J.R.R. Tolkien, he was a funny guy. He enjoyed life. He had a lot of love for life. And that kind of love for life was very heavily impacted, as the rest of his life would be, from his experiences at war.
Yeah.
You know, it's at this point, it's very well known that the aspects of Lord of the Rings were directly influenced, or his kind of vision for Lord of the Rings was directly influenced by his experience in the trenches. And man, you know, it's interesting to me that he was a storyteller through and through. And so like every single time that he got a chance, he was jotting down stories. And in fact, you know, he had a journal that he kind of kept with him that he called the Book of Lost Tales, where he would just kind of write down these different stories and thoughts and feelings and basically kind of almost a personal story journal.
Wow.
Where it wasn't just him sharing what he thought, but it was almost him putting himself in kind of, you know, kind of wrapping narrative around what was going on in his life or what he was observing, almost as kind of like a, and this is just me kind of projecting here, but almost kind of like a psychological processing of the extremities around him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was, like you said, I guess, trying to develop those things and record them. I don't even know how to say it.
I find it fascinating because, I mean, he was very much in love with the idea of story. You know, he was in love with the idea of history as well. He was somebody who did not have a, you know, he was almost kind of like, if you think about Tolkien and his approach to fiction, it's almost like the anti-Star Trek. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, so if Star Trek, and I say this, I'm not trying to hate on Star Trek at all. I'm not a Trek guy. I'm not a Trekkie or a Trekker or anything of that nature. John David's probably more into Star Trek than I am. That shows you.
I've kind of come along, but on the Star Trek stuff. Part of that's by marriage, and part of that's just I've learned to enjoy it. But yeah, I don't. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
All right. Well, in that case, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but the general sense of Star Trek is kind of the promise that technology, like, creates a better society, right?
Yeah.
Like, we are able to kind of progress as a society because of the impact of technology and the advancements, and the kind of that kind of trickle out effect. Kind
that's
of
right. And eventually, right? You know, problems are solved and are problems no more. They're things of the past, right?
Right. Exactly. So on kind of the complete opposite side, you have Tolkien, who was very much so on the side of like, well, technology is bad. Like the more that time goes on, the worse off things get. And the more that we kind of dive into technology, and admittedly, you know, in the age of Twitter and, you know, the impact of social media on just everything in general, it's hard to argue with him. Of course, at the time, his mindset was more on, you know, weapons of mass destruction and seeing just these advanced ways of ending human life. And just kind of the this feeling as though we're heading in the wrong direction. And Tolkien was very kind of defined by that. Like his mindset, his philosophy was very much on this kind of trajectory of we're always going to lose and we're just going to keep on being defeated and defeated and defeated. Mm. Now, as a Christian man, as a Catholic, you know, we know that he also saw a greater victory coming beyond this world. And so there, he wasn't, you know, what's the word for somebody who's just like completely negative all the time or thinks that like the world is meaningless?
Yeah. Like a fatalist kind of thing. I mean, I think, you know, what you're saying is true. I mean, you know, if you look at his experiences in World War One and just how gory they were and, you know, in his mind, even demonic, I mean, you know, this is a war where the entire order of things was upturned. We've talked before about, you know, folks entering World War One, you know, with where, you know, on horseback with bayonets wearing feathered caps. And you come out on the other side of World War One and we have the tank and, you know, mass, you know, warfare and mustard gas and everything else. And so, you know, it's hard to see why he wouldn't be discouraged from that. Right. I mean, you're right in the middle of it and just, you know, incredible. Seeing this stuff as a Briton, you know, fighting in that environment, you understand. But then, you know, he has this redemptive hope, right? That, you know, as a person, as someone who is a believer, that stream runs through his, you know, characterization of how he's interpreting the events of the world. And of course, that makes its way into his fiction.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, like I mentioned before that, you know, he has this legendary friendship with Lewis and Tolkien, his faith being a strong influence in his life, is kind of credited for kind of actually bringing Lewis into Christianity as well. Albeit, you know, if you think about the fact that Tolkien was a Catholic and Lewis only made it to Anglican, it's almost like he didn't quite make the mark. It's like, oh, almost Catholic. You know?
Yeah. It's like, what do we say about my fellow Anglicans? It's like, you know, it almost all the pageantry of Catholicism, but none of the guilt, you know?
Right. So you almost have to wonder, you know, as a Catholic, if Tolkien was like, ah, just missed it.
I know. So close. Yeah. No, it is cool. You know, that obviously was a real special relationship there. And of course, these were brilliant people that, you know, were incredibly, you know, deliberate and thoughtful about how they thought about the world, how they thought about their theology, their thoughts on sociology and philosophy and everything else. And so, you know, they had complex opinions and, you know, of course, got together to talk about these things over things like a pipe and rich beer, you know, and that was pretty cool. I would love to have been a fly on the wall.
Yeah, man. So they were part of this organization, this kind of group of folks called the Inklings. Now, this is a kind of now famed group of writers that would come together and, like you say, enjoy beer, enjoy pipes at the local pub, the Bird and Baby, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's kind of
the slang for it. But yeah, the Inklings was the name of their organization. And now this is really fascinating. And this is something that I did not know before doing my research. So you know, Lewis, we've actually done an episode on Lewis in the past. And of course, Lewis famous for Chronicles of Narnia, but also famous for his space series.
Space trilogy. Yeah.
Space trilogy. Now, do you know the origins of where that space trilogy came from, John David?
I actually don't. You know, I've read those books and I love Lewis, but they just don't seem to fit, you know, his whole... I don't know, kind of working model. I'd love to know.
All right. So this is really interesting. So legend has it that there was a coin toss between, Tolkien and Lewis. And the idea was that one of them was going, like one of them had to write a space novel and the other one had to write a time travel novel. And so the die was cast, as it were, the coin was tossed. And so Lewis got space and Tolkien got time.
Way. Yeah.
And so, of course, Lewis goes on to create the Perelandra series, where it's kind of his space series. And in that series, he actually bases the main character after Tolkien, who's kind of responsible for the creation of this because of this bet that they had between each other, or this kind of gentleman's agreement, whatever you want to call it. Tolkien, on the other hand, though, he never fully made good on his promise. Now, that being said, he did begin a book that would be kind of come known as The Lost Road, That was kind of the original title. And okay. the premise was of time travelers who would go back in time and visit Atlantis, the lost city of Atlantis, before it sank.
Okay.
And so, you know, buying in directly to Tolkien's love of history and this idea of kind of, you know, exploring a civilization at its pinnacle before, you know, technology destroys it. You know, one imagines that would have been a major theme of this book. But what's really interesting, though, is that even though The Lost Road never saw the light of day, even though he never completed it, he repurposed a ton of the lore into what became the foundations for the Middle Earth kind of lore for lack of a better word. But basically,
really? Wow.
Yeah. So if I'm getting this right, and I'm sure that like Tolkien devotees will come and correct and you know, by all means,
as necessary. Send those tweets.
Yeah. Absolutely. But the idea was that his story or his kind of lore around Atlantis became the lore for the origins of the people that Aragorn directly came from, descended from. The idea that they actually came from this island that, you know, was because of things that happened in the far distant past, it ended up sinking underwater and everything else. And so their language, their history and everything got repurposed from this book and became the origins of kind of this kind of offset of humanity in Lord of the Rings.
Wow, that's just so incredible. You've got to admire his adaptability for that. That's remarkable.
Oh yeah, well, and that's the thing. He loved kind of coming up with these concepts and pouring them into story. I mean, I think at this point we probably are all very much aware of his love of languages. That in fact, the Hobbit and the world of Middle Earth kind of came out of him first creating these languages and needing a story to justify the fact that he created these languages. And so, you know, he was somebody who was deeply passionate, very, very, detail oriented, which is kind of funny because when it comes to fiction, he made a point to create stories that he was translating from someone else. The idea, of course, that he found a history and he was doing his best to translate this history, but perhaps some things may have gotten lost, almost giving himself a bit of a mulligan in his own storytelling, right? Like, you know, it may not be perfect here, yet he goes into extreme detail on everything, but it may not be perfect here because, you know, some of the nuances may have been lost in translation as he's bringing forth the history of whatever this story may be. And before diving too much deeper into his actual work itself, I mean, it has to be noted as well. I mentioned before, prankster, partier, terrible driver, costumer, also lover. Oh yes. He was a passionate man. And, he had a very, very, passionate relationship with his wife, Edith, Bratz, if I'm not mistaken. And, interestingly enough, because of their faith differences. She was, he was Catholic. She was not, he was not allowed to actually pursue her. They met when they were teenagers. And, so it wasn't until they kind of came of age that he was able to kind of be freed to go after her. And at that point she was actually engaged to someone else. And, old boy Tolkien started dropping little Elvin in her ear. And then all of a sudden she dumps other dude and goes off and marries future Mr. Moneybags here. So it works out really well for her.
Dropping a little Elvin in her ear. Yeah, man. I that's solid, man. I may have to take a play out of old JRR's book at some point. Yeah.
Well, you know what? You think about kind of the beauty of, especially kind of these Elven women that, kind of are prominent in Lord of the Rings. And a lot of the visuals came specifically from his wife and kind of the way that he looked at his wife and kind of this beautiful person, passionate, filled with life and appreciating the world around her. And so, you know, obviously, with any storyteller, you know, we talk about the fact that he's influenced by, you know, his personal love of life, the fact that he was a partier, that he enjoyed pipe tobacco, he enjoyed beer. And then also he was, you know, impacted by the darkness around him and seeing kind of technology advance and killing people around him. And then also his passionate love and you know, experiencing kind of that true, you know, that truest of love that we can get this side of glory. Mm-hmm. And then also his faith. These all kind of mixed together to create this fantastic storyteller who is not without his faults. You know, we always look back at somebody and we kind of glorify them. And, you know, the interesting thing is because Tolkien was one of the most influential writers of his time, and because so many different writers have borrowed from him,
yeah,
that yields great fantasy, but it also brings with it some of the scars of time as well. So
yeah,
but regardless, fantastic writer, fantastic individual, and worth studying.
Yeah.
Now, of course, the reason why we're talking about him is, he would not be a hero of a bowl if he was not an iconic pipe smoker, which he absolutely was. And it's not just that he was somebody who enjoyed his pipe and enjoyed pipe tobacco and was famed for it, famed for talking about it, famed for, being photographed with his pipe, but also because he wrote about it. He created such lore and history and myth, not just for England, not just for the world, but in fact for us as a pipe community.
Yeah.
And John David, I hope this is okay. Like, literally, I hope we don't get sued over this. I want to kind of put something right here in the audio. This is actually from Lord of the Rings that you're about to hear from the audiobook. And this is kind of a history of pipe tobacco in accordance with kind of from Middle Earth. And as you're listening to this, remember that Tolkien is from his mindset, he's translating this as kind of this alternate history of the world, a found history of the world. So theoretically, this could be the real origins of pipe tobacco.
There is another thing about the hobbits of old that must be mentioned, an astonishing habit. They imbibed or inhaled, through pipes of clay or wood, the smoke of the burning leaves of a herb, which they called pipeweed or leaf, a variety probably of Nicotiana. A great deal of mystery surrounds the origin of this peculiar custom, or art, as the hobbits preferred to call it. All that could be discovered about it in antiquity was put together by Meriadoc Brandybuck, later Master of Buckland, and since he and the tobacco of the South Farthing play a part in the history that follows, his remarks in the introduction to his Herb Lore of the Shire may be quoted. "This," he says, "is the one art that we can certainly claim to be our own invention. When hobbits first began to smoke is not known. All the legends and family histories take it for granted. For ages, folk in the Shire smoked various herbs, some fouler, some sweeter. But all accounts agree that Tobold Hornblower of Longbottom in the South Farthing first grew the true pipeweed in his gardens in the days of Isengrim II, about the year 1070 of Shire reckoning. The best homegrown still comes from that district, especially the varieties now known as Longbottom Leaf, Old Toby, and Southern Star. How Old Toby came by the plant is not recorded, for to his dying day he would not tell. He knew much about herbs, but he was no traveller. It is said that in his youth he went often to Bree, though he certainly never went further from the Shire than that. It is thus quite possible that he learned of this plant in Bree, where now, at any rate, it grows well on the south slopes of the hill. The Bree hobbits claim to have been the first actual smokers of the pipeweed. They claim, of course, to have done everything before the people of the Shire, whom they refer to as colonists. But in this case, their claim is, I think, likely to be true. And certainly it was from Bree that the art of smoking the genuine weed spread in the recent centuries among dwarves and such other folk, rangers, wizards, or wanderers, as still passed to and fro through the ancient road meeting. The home and centre of the art is thus to be found in the old inn of Bree, the Prancing Pony, that has been kept by the family of Butterbur from time beyond record. All the same, observations that I have made on my own many journeys south have convinced me that the weed itself is not native to our part of the world, but came northward from the lower Anduin, whither it was, I suspect, originally brought oversea by the men of Westerness. It grows abundantly in Gondor, and there is richer and larger than in the north, where it is never found wild, and flourishes only in warm, sheltered places like Longbottom. The men of Gondor call it sweet Galenas, and esteem it only for the fragrance of its flowers. From that land it must have been carried up the Greenway during the long centuries between the coming of Elendil and our own days. But even the Dunedain of Gondor allow us this credit. Hobbits first put it into pipes. Not even the wizards first thought of that before we did. the one wizard that I knew, took up the art long ago and became as skillful in it as in all other things that he put his mind to.
Now, obviously, you know, not the real history of pipe tobacco, but certainly a beautiful one and a fun one to explore.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, it is a fun one to explore. It's one of those things that obviously it was important enough to him in his personal life that he and enjoyable enough to him that he wanted to weave it throughout his fiction. And it truly is. It is throughout Tolkien's fiction. It's everywhere. Tolkien, he was an avid pipe smoker. I mean, this is a person that was constantly found with his pipe, and maybe at the Eagle and Child with his friend Lewis there in Oxford over a mug of dark beer. There are many photos of him with pipes, smoking a pipe, talking about his pipe. It is well established that Tolkien, of course, enjoyed capstan. This was his favorite tobacco. It was one of those things that his son, Christopher, later in life, remembered that, their home growing up was littered with empty tins of capstan, right? That, he would save and then use for to collect various trinkets and things of that nature. But, there's just tobacco, leftovers kind of all over the place. And of course, this delicious capstan was kind of his go-to. So capstan, has changed a lot over the years, but is currently made by the MacBaren Company. For decades was made by W.D. and H.O. Wills. For the most part, tried to maintain the same formula, but, again, tobacco is a natural product, and so things change, adapt, recipes are adjusted and even lost in some cases. And so capstan has always been that kind of navy flake tobacco. It's, a tobacco that focuses on Virginia's bright and mature leaf, Virginia that, just has a real nice kind of natural, rich, mellow flavor to it. There's probably a little topping on capstan, although they don't really admit to that very much. But if it's a true navy flake, a lot of times we see that type of thing. But Tolkien loved this. He kept his pipe around all the time. Also was a fan of the Player's Navy Cut, which unfortunately is no longer made. But similar tobacco to the capstan, very much Virginia with just a little bit of that rum topping. Most photos show Tolkien with a straight pipe, which was probably a Dunhill, although, that was never confirmed. Never really talked about, the type of pipe that he used, but was always caught with his pipe. It's interesting. Lewis, of course, he was dear friends with Lewis, smoked what we called a campaign pipe. It was a pipe that was issued to the British troops that were from Dunhill. And so it's very likely that Tolkien himself smoked a campaign pipe as well, which would have meant he was a Dunhill smoker. But all that to say, those straight billiards, thick walls, and big, generous bowls, awesome reading pipes. It's one of those things that you just kind of envision when you think about Tolkien smoking a pipe. And of course, there's a lot of photographic evidence for that. He said, quote, "I've always smoked. It's so tied to writing that I can't write without it." And it's very apparent, and he really used his love of this. He weaved it through all of his various stories, his favorite characters. Of course, we talk about in the lore of Middle Earth, the tobaccos that come out, the Old Toby, which is the finest pipe weed in all of South Farthing, and Longbottom Leaf and Southern Star. And he talked about how, Gandalf picked this ritual up from the hobbits, and the hobbits gave it to Gandalf, and Gandalf uses it as this element of wisdom and meditation and thoughtfulness and all these things. And I think Tolkien really lives in that space himself and really shows, I don't know, he's kind of living through Gandalf and the hobbits there. And it really comes through. So it's just, you're just an iconic pipe smoker. And one of those guys that, because he wrote all this, because he lived it, put it in his work, and his work has been so timeless, the richness of Tolkien's work keeps giving back and keeps inspiring new pipe smokers every year. Not just because of, you know, Peter Jackson's movies that have, you know, been renditions of Tolkien's work, but because of the work themselves, people reading, kids reading these books year after year, and eventually when they come of age, picking up that pipe because, you know, maybe The Hobbit was their favorite novel growing up. So just a remarkable man and a real true hero of the bowl, someone we can all really be thankful for.
Absolutely. I want to pitch this right now, and I want feedback from the listeners, because I'd be curious if there'd be any interest for this. I would love, you know, at this point now we've done kind of a deep dive into C.S. Lewis. You know, with this episode, we've done a deep dive into J.R.R. Tolkien. I would love to, like, revisit these men's friendship, you know what I mean? And kind of go into some of their philosophical, you know, thoughts and even like some of the things they disagreed on, and just kind of just visit some of those ideas. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And kind of almost in like a conversations over a pipe type of series, because obviously that would not be as deep into pipes or tobacco. We can kind of touch on what they may have been smoking at the time, but really kind of get into some of the conversations that came, you know, knowing full well that there was plumes of smoke surrounding them as these things were being discussed.
Yeah.
I'd just be curious if there was interest for that. So anyway, let us know what you think, but hopefully you've enjoyed this deep dive into Tolkien. And you know, there's only one way you can really do a deep dive into Tolkien, and that's of course by packing your pipe with some good quality tobacco and a good quality corncob pipe. Not just any corncob pipe, mind you, from Missouri Meerschaum, but not just any corncob pipe from Missouri Meerschaum, mind you, like specifically they have gone out of their way to create an amazing series of pipes called the Cobbett series of pipes, which I now own, I think, three of the four. Right now.
Yeah. It's so great. The Cobbetts are tremendous pipes, and of course they are an homage to Tolkien and his incredible universe. But they're just doggone good pipes in and of themselves, man. They have incredibly high quality stems, beautiful little brass or nickel mounts there on the end of the tenon, and of course the hardwood insert in the bottom of the bowl. All of them have generous bowls, but the wizard in particular has a really large, big bowl, deep bowl.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the dwarf and the shire, which have more of a kind of a medium to full size bowl, and then the elf, which really shows out as kind of a middle point between the shire dwarf and the wizard. So just great, incredible pipes, really high quality production here, and they range anywhere from $19.99 to $32.99. Individually, which is incredibly, incredibly affordable and a great value for the quality of pipe that you're getting. So, of course, these are longer stem pipes. They can kind of do favor smaller church wardens, which are really nice. And so it does tend to cool that smoke down just a little bit as you're puffing some of your favorite Hobbit weed. So anyway, really encourage you to get one, smoke one, collect the whole series too. They even come in a Cobbett Collection gift set, which is available that has three of the four of the entire collection. So check them out, man. If you've got one of those pipes, we'd love for you to smoke it this week. Tweet us a picture and we'll tweet it back out to let Missouri Meerschaum know that we appreciate them for sponsoring this show.
Absolutely. The dwarf in particular is like, it's fine. You know, Country Gentleman's still my favorite Missouri Meerschaum, but like, like the dwarf is,
it's just
coming
home,
in
baby.
Hot, man. Yeah, I'm loving that pipe.
It's a great pipe.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Pipe question of the week.
All right, man. Pipe question of the week coming in from CDV.
CDV.
This question is, yes, sir. How much of a pipe purchase should be visual rather than functional? Last week, you talked about the various grains displayed in the Father the Flame movie. But what value does grain bring to the actual ability to smoke the pipe, if any? Thanks, CDV.
Yeah, we kind of have two questions here, right, that we're working with. So how much of a pipe purchase should be visual rather than functional? Let's take that one first. So when you smoke a pipe, right, there's a reason when folks shop for pipes at the Country Squire that right up front next to our pipe display, there's a large mirror. And, we encourage people to try on their pipes. When you are smoking your pipe, you're making a visual statement. You're making a statement about who you are and what is important to you and the nature of your hobbies and character and all that other stuff. And so because you're making a statement, you want to make sure you're making the right statement. And so the visual look of it, I think to some degree, is an important thing. We've got these guys, they'll put the little plastic sleeve over the end of the stem and take a look at it, in the mirror just to kind of see if it fits their look. And I think that's understandable. I really do. So the visual part of it can be important. Now, if you're talking visually about something like the grain, we're talking about, both something that is partially functional, but also is very aesthetically pleasing and can be collectible. And so as far as the functionality of it, the grain itself, the tighter the grain, typically on a pipe, this can have an effect on the quality of the smoke. Any opportunity, any time you see tight grain, you're looking at passageways for air to escape the pipe. And so, for heat to be radiated out of the pipe. Now, some people will say, does it make that big of a difference? Well, I don't know, here and there. But, there is something to be said. The pipes that have the better grain overall typically, tend to smoke a little cooler in my experience. And I think a lot of that does have to do with the quality of the grain. But, also folks that get the better grain pipes, some of your more reputable pipe carvers and pipe manufacturers, they're also caring for their pipes better, right? And so they're not, I'm a reputable pipe manufacturer. I got this, really beautiful grain pipe. I'm not going to rush the process, right? I'm going to make sure the drilling is right, that the briar is aged correctly, that it's not force aged by being, kiln dried or something like that. That the pipe is carved, properly and all those other things. The proportions are correct, and I just think there's something correlated there that is more than you might think. So, but anyway, the grain itself can be a visual representation of opportunity for heat to escape the pipe, and so there is that. But over and above that, the grain is a collectible, thing in and of itself, and at some point you are paying just for, the beauty of the piece and the collectible quality of the grain, the uniqueness of it, the exquisite patterns that might be there, things like bird's eye and tight straight grain, flame grain, bird's eye flanking the top and the bottom of the pipe with straight grain going across the sides. All these things are, aesthetically very pleasing, and in some cases very rare, very hard to get your hands on. And so talking about the grain of the pipe, what value does grain bring to the actually ability to smoke a pipe, if any? I think it correlates to some degree with a better smoking pipe. And I think that's, just historically kind of played out pretty apparently. Now, we've got folks that are like, man, I've got this pipe. It's got the ugliest grain I've ever seen, and it smokes like a champ. That's true. I'm not saying that doesn't exist, but I think on average, your pipes with better grain are gonna smoke better. So over and above that, you are to some degree paying for a thing of beauty, a thing that might be collectible or otherwise, and that has its own value too, because you are looking at your pipe and you are making a statement when you smoke it.
Man, that's good. I never really considered that fact, that it was almost like quality grain in a pipe almost is this way of flagging, like, hey, this person actually knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
That's not to say, obviously, I mean, there's some great pipe carvers out there that may not have access, but still, that's fascinating. I never thought about it through that lens. Great question, CDV. And hey, if you've got a pipe question for us, be sure to send those in. Show@countrysquireradio.com. Again, that's show@countrysquireradio.com.
Quick fire with the squire.
Quick fire question. Ow! All right, man. These are continuing on the quick fire questions from Pastor Joda and brought to us by the awesome Country Squire Radio shirts available at thecountrysquireonline.com. More on that in just a second. Continuing on with Pastor Joda's Chillaxin edition. Are you ready, sir?
Bring it, baby.
All right. On a boat or on a jet ski?
You know, I've only been on a jet ski, I think, twice in my life, and it was fun. It's just something I never really had access to growing up, I guess. But
you had access twice more than I did.
twice more than you did, I get right. Yeah. I don't know. I liked being on jet ski, but I want to be on a boat.
I never thought I'd be on a boat. No, I've been on.
I'm smelling what you're stepping in, Bo.
I love being on boats, man. I love it so much. When we went to Greece a while back, we were on the Aegean Sea and we took this charter fishing. But I think I've told this story before. But I took this boat, this kind of like, you know, family owned, multi generational fishing boat that took us out and went fishing, and it was just
it
was glorious, man. I mean, it wasn't, you know, it was no luxury yacht, you know, whatever, and it wasn't like a, you know, high end like speedboat type situation. It was like a rough, you know, not small family fishing boat with, you know, there was kind of space for people to sleep in it and everything else. And anyway, all that to say, I love the just being out on the ocean, being on a boat and like, just kind of camping out, drinking wine, throwing the fishing line out the side. And that's good stuff. Jet ski, never been on it. Would love to try it, but, I'll take a boat every time.
Never thought I'd be on a boat.
All right, man. Visiting a historic site or museum or visiting a theme park?
Yeah, I'm going to go 8 times out of 10 visiting a historic site or museum. I mean, that's obvious for me, right? I mean, I think so. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, so this is not to disparage historic sites or museums. I love both. Museums in particular, because it's curated history. You know what I mean? Like, so you get like a, you know, full story, whereas historic sites are great if you know the history. Museums are great for teaching you the history.
That's an interesting way to look at it.
And so, you know, I love both for sure. Theme parks, though, I don't visit theme parks all that often, but I love the idea of theme parks. Like, I'm a big fan. I've made reference to this before. A big fan of Westworld and kind of Michael Crichton's vision for, you know, if you kind of trace the original Westworld film to Jurassic Park to, you know, the HBO series Westworld and kind of this idea of a theme park gone horribly, horribly wrong. But then also the idea of, you know, curated narrative in a space in which you're experiencing it. I don't know. There's something about that really I find really fascinating. So I'm going to say theme park.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
That's what I'm going to say. Actually, I watched the original Westworld from the 70s. Last night as part of my Father's Day dinner, me and my wife watched that after the kids went down. And man, you want to talk about like a movie of the era in terms of just the worst special effects. And like the storytelling is very much like, you know, monster attacks and we're running away from monster and we defeated the monster and the movie's over and nobody asks why. There's no development here. It's just it. But anyway. All right, next up, chatting it up with friends or quiet solitude?
Okay, this one, I actually cheated and took a peek at the next question down the line as we were talking here. And I saw this question, I was like, really? Because I can't, this is like apples and oranges to me. I mean, for me, I spend all day every day at the shop, you know, talking. And so a lot of times when I get home, it is quiet solitude that I'm really looking for. But, you know, a well-rested John David Cole who has had his tank filled with good things and has, you know, lots of time and energy and, you know, is in a good mood. I'm probably going to go with chatting it up with friends if that person is present. the exhausted, crotchety, ornery, foul-tempered John David that often, you know, ends the day and just wants to be quiet and pout on the couch with his dog and a good glass of whiskey, he would prefer quiet solitude.
Enjoy it while you got it still.
I know, right?
Yeah. You know, so it's funny. If I was back in Jackson, my answer to that would probably be depends on the friend. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's some friends that I would like drop anything at any time, you know, non-family or, you know, related or anything like that. But I would stop what I would do just to kind of sit down and have a chat with. And then there's some friends that like, oh man, this is great. You know, great catching up and like hanging out. But man, it takes energy.
<You know? laughs> Yes, sir.
And so, you know, so it does kind of depend on the friend. That being said, since being in a new city, I've kind of had my fill of quiet solitude. I like it. Don't get me wrong. Especially, yeah. You know, with the added time of with kids over the summer and everything, you know, those moments of solitude are precious. But no, man, I miss chatting it up with friends. I'd definitely take that.
That's great.
All right, and then finally, porch swing or hammock. We really should have saved this one for when we do the the porch.
I know, right? Yeah.
Thing, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go with porch swing. I like a hammock, but yeah, I'll go with porch swings. Typically, porch swing, you know, I mean, you're on a porch, and so it's covered. If it's raining, you don't get hit by the rain. You're sitting up on a swing, and so, you know, you can have a place to put your, glass next to you and maybe sit your pipe down on a table, and it's easier to, you know, pat your dog's head and all that kind of stuff. I like a hammock, but they can be kind of awkward, particularly when you're smoking your pipe, as evidenced by all the ember holes in my hammock.
right. No, that's good, man. All right, yeah, me for the exact same reasons. Excellent questions from Pastor Jonah. Of course, these are brought to you by the amazing Country Squire Radio shirts. Represent the Country Squire Radio podcast by heading over to thecountrysquireonline.com and picking yourself up some swag today.
Your thoughts, your comments. Listener feedback.
All right, man. Listen to feedback, and we're kind of running up on time here. So I think let's jump down to Jim's email, because this is kind of related to our conversation yesterday. And interestingly enough, he did not realize this, but kind of related to this episode right here.
Yeah. No, that's great. John David hit a hot button for me in the movie review. Of course, mentioning the movie review we did of Father of the Flame last week, which was so much fun. He says, for centuries, the name of the rock layer that could become sacred stone was and is pipestone. It was an outsider, a technician, a scientist upstart who presumed to name it after himself and call it Catlinite. Might as well have called it Sarumanite, because Saruman represents the sort of destructive technology and arrogance that Catlin was, intentional and unintentional, a part of. So he goes on to say, in the gentle land of pipe smoking, let's take a stand against the Saruman-esque slant in our society and call the stone by its proper name, and that is pipestone. So,
that's great,
man,
John.
Good call, man. Yeah, Jim, he, of course, man, good friend of the show. And yeah, man, it is. It's pipestone. There's a whole city in Minnesota named after it, and that is where the beautiful kind of pinkish stone comes from that so many of those Native American pipes are carved from. So, great point, man. Thanks for writing in.
He made reference in his email too. I mean, it's just kind of the kind of colonistic nature to, you know, go in like, oh, we have discovered this. Like, no, a white guy showed up with a flag. this was already here.
right.
Oh, this, I have found this thing. And, you know, it's just kind of part of the unfortunate history of the world.
That's part of, yeah, exactly. Yep.
But I like that. No, I think as pipe smokers, we absolutely should get back down to the root, as you know, if I could get a pun in there on it, no, and go back to it. So I love it, man. Pipestone. Absolutely. 100%, Jim. All right. So also, if you've got some feedback, if y'all want to send us any thoughts, be sure to do so. You can email the show@countrysquireradio.com. You can also hit us up on Twitter at Squire Radio is the show. You can follow me. I'm at The Real Bo York.
I'm at John David Cole, or you can get us at the shop at @_CountrySquire.
All that information and more can be found at CountrySquireRadio.com. Mentioned at the top of the show, but of course we've got that Pipe Culture Places episode coming up on the porch. Be sure to send those thoughts into the show. We'd love to read those off once we get to that episode. We really hope that you've enjoyed this particular episode on Tolkien. And John David, man, let's go have a day.
See you, brother.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.